Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, May 12th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who joins us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my nearly 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description. For the primary tool in this work called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, the tool itself is one I've been using to great effect for the last 16-plus years to manage my emotions and relationships, improve my quality of life, and turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. You can also download, just click and download the PDF file of the actual worksheet process. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process live on real life issues that are upsetting them. You can also download from your app store a completely free and private app. All you have to do is go to either app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. Tap on that. It contains a download that will give you the Reality Management Worksheet itself, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. So we hope you will avail yourself of that free opportunity and do the worksheet process or download it and explore it soon and often, and then give us a call if you've got questions. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. The other thing we're doing this year is we're going through the Course in Miracles lessons, and today is the 132nd day of the year, so lesson 132 from the Course in Miracles workbook lesson reads, I loose the world from all I thought it was. I let it go from all that I thought it was. I release it from all I thought it was. The commentary reads, what keeps the world in chains but your beliefs? Nothing does but your beliefs. And what can save the world except your true self? Nothing. Belief is powerful indeed. The thoughts you hold are mighty, and illusions are as strong as their effects, in their effects, as is the truth. So one of the things that's said quite often in the way of mastery is, illusions have great power within an illusory world. They have no power in the actual world. They have no power when you see them for what they are. But if you're living in the world of illusion, the illusions that you experience are very powerful in creating your experience of life. The commentary goes on. A madman thinks the world he sees is real and does not doubt it, nor can he be swayed by questioning his thoughts, which are its effects. But it is but their source. It is but when their source is raised to question that the hope of freedom comes to him at last. So someone has to come along and help us question everything we've been told is true, everything we have come to believe. Our beliefs are very, very powerful. The difficulty is they're nowhere near as beneficial as direct observation, as questioning. So the commentary continues, yet is salvation easily achieved, for anyone is free to change his or her mind, and all of her thoughts change with it. Now the source of thought has shifted, for to change your mind means you have changed the source of all ideas you ever think, or ever thought, or yet will think. You free the past from what you thought before. You free the future from all ancient thoughts of seeking what you do not want to find. The present now remains the only time. Here in the present is the world set free. For as you let the past be lifted and release the future from your ancient fears, you find escape and you give it to the world. You have enslaved the world with all your fears, your doubts and miseries, your pain and tears and all your sorrows. Press on it and keep the world a prisoner to your beliefs. That's the world that you experience. Right? In this commentary, they're talking about the world you experience has been enslaved by you with all of your fears, your doubts, your miseries, your pain and tears. And all the sorrows that you imagine and then create and experience press in on the world that you experience. And they keep that world that you experience a prisoner to your beliefs. Death strikes at it everywhere because you hold the bitter thoughts of death within your mind. That world is nothing within itself. Your mind must give it meaning. And what you behold are your wishes acted out so you can look on them and then think them real. Perhaps you think you did not make the world that you see, but you came unwillingly to what was made already, hardly waiting for your thoughts to give it meaning. Yet, in truth, you found exactly what you looked for when you came here. We have been programmed to perceive the world that we perceive. There is no world apart from what you wish, and herein lies your ultimate release. Change but your mind on what you want to see, and all the world must change accordingly. Here's an idea that's repeated frequently in the Course. Ideas leave not their source. This central theme is often stated in the text and must be borne in mind if you want to understand the lesson for today. It is not pride which tells you that you made the world you see and that it changes as you change your mind. So if it's the truth, it's not pride. And this is just the way things work. When I choose to see pain and struggle and misery, that's what I see. When I choose to see joy and aliveness and ease and respect, that's what I see. So it is not pride which tells you that you have made the world you see. But it is pride that argues that you have come into a world quite separate from yourself, impervious to what you think and quite apart from what you chance to think it is. Here's the statement that so many people get hung up on and put a lot of meaning into in this work. Quote, there is no world! This is the central thought the Course attempts to teach. Not everyone is ready to accept it, and each must go as far as she can and let herself be led among the road to truth. She will return and go still further, or perhaps take a step back and then return again. The fact of the matter is, there is no world other than that which we project upon what is true. We are only always and forever creating our experience with what we choose. The commentary continues to say, but healing is the gift of those who are prepared to learn there is no world and can accept the lesson now. Their readiness will bring the lesson to them in some form which they can understand and recognize. Some see it suddenly on point of death and rise to teach it. Others find it in experience that is not of this world, which shows them that the world does not exist the way they perceive it, because what they behold must be the truth, and yet it clearly contradicts the world. And so some will find it in this course and in the exercises that we do today. Today's idea is true because the world does not exist for you outside of what you perceive it to be. And if it is indeed your own imagining, then you can loose it. You can let it loose from all of the things you ever thought it was by merely changing all the thoughts that gave it these appearances. As you do that, the sick are healed as you let go all thoughts of sickness. As you do that, the dead arise when you let go of thoughts of life that replace all thoughts you've ever held of death. A lesson earlier repeated once must now be stressed again, for it contains the firm foundation for today's idea. That lesson is this: you are as God created you. There is no place where you can suffer and no time that can bring change to your eternal state. How can a world of time and place exist if you remain as God created you? What is the lesson for today except another way of saying that to know your true self is the salvation of the world? To free the world from every kind of pain is but to change your mind about yourself. There is no world apart from your ideas, because ideas leave not their source, and you maintain the world within your mind, in your thought. Yet, if you are as God created you, you cannot think apart from him, nor make what he does not share his timeless and love. Are these inherent in the world you see? Right? Is timelessness and love inherent in the world you see? If it is, you're seeing clearly. If not, you've made up a false perception. So release the world. Your real creations wait for this release to give you fatherhood, not of illusions, but as the creator in truth. The creator shares its birthing power with you, who are its offspring, and he makes no distinctions in what is himself and what is still himself. What he creates is not apart from him, and nowhere does the creator end and the offspring of creation begin as something separate from him. There is no world that you see because it's a thought apart from God, and it was made to separate the Father and its offspring. So, today our purpose is to free the world from all of the idle thoughts we ever held about it, and about all living things we see upon it. Begin the 15-minute periods in which we practice twice today with this: I remain as God created me. I would loose the world from all I thought it was, for I am real because the world is not, and I would know my reality. So Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment, her lesson 132 reads, life doesn't suck. Stuff doesn't happen, and the glass is 100% full. She quotes A Course in Miracles as saying, his gifts are sure, eternal, changeless, limitless, forever giving out, extending love, and adding to your never-ending joy. Pam writes, the quote at the top of this entry is a mighty big claim, and it's far removed from what most of us believe. To get it, to really believe I am meant to be happy, is the first step to enlightenment. Any other choice, and make no mistake, it is a choice. Any other choice is a fool's errand. That is why Lesson 132 asks me to loose the world, let the world loose from all I thought it was. Current scientific theory alleges that we're born into a world quite separate from ourselves, a world impervious to what we think. But once again, this lesson reminds us there is no world apart from what I wish. So I can either enslave the world with my fears, doubts, and miseries, or I can choose what this lesson calls my ultimate release. I can continue to believe in the world as it appears now, or I can believe in my eternal state. I can settle for what is, or I can create something new. I can continue to interfere with truth, or I can step aside and let my natural joy rush in. It's a simple matter of deciding where to shine my spotlight. So, earlier I was reading, I think it's page 31, from The Course in Miracles Made Easy. And it really stirred up in me the idea of our selective perception. And here's a quote from Alan Cohen. He says, to be healed and happy, you must seek, find, and affirm evidence for your innocence. If this seems difficult, recognize that you have become adept at seeking, finding, and affirming signals of your guilt. You are a master at selecting elements of your experience and using them to prove your weakness. You can use the same faculty of selective perception to underscore your strength. Tip the balance of justice in your favor by realizing that the only real justice is forgiveness. And I was talking about this yesterday because it reminded me of, and I replayed the story of a woman who came in and told a story of her parenting, and she was in tears thinking what a horrible parent she was at the end of the story, and I was sitting here listening to her tell the story and filled with thoughts of, my gosh, I'm in the presence of one of the best mothers ever. It's about our perception. It's about the meaning we give to the signals that strike us from the outside and the thoughts we have about it. It's about the interpretations we give these things. I was mentioning yesterday the Choose Again six-step process, and Diedrich was talking in a YouTube video about how he did a session with somebody a lot of years ago, and the man made over $400,000, and he walked in and said, I'm depressed. What are you going to do about it? I'm clinically depressed. What are you going to do about it? And Diedrich does what he does with everybody and starts exploring it. And he began by making the statement, wow, clinical depression, that's an interesting choice you're making. And the man got angry and said, I'm not making this choice. My grandfather was depressed. My father was depressed. And I'm depressed. It's clinical depression. And by the time he finished that first session, Diedrich just continued to make the observation that this is a choice, very much like the Course in Miracles lessons and Way of Mastery teach us, we are choosing our interpretation of events and the signals that hit our senses. We're choosing what we focus on. We're choosing how we interpret it. And that's what creates our experience of life. So the man came back for a second session. And in it he said, you know, I'm depressed because I have a completely joyless life. And Dietrich said to him, okay, so when was the first time you had the belief that this was a completely joyless life? And the man played around with it and came up with age 3. He remembered being 3 years old, walking into his very successful father's very large office. He came in from the outside. He was carrying a beetle or some kind of an insect and was all excited and happy. And his dad just looked at him sternly and raised an eyebrow, and that was it. The 3-year-old, who clearly was a very bright person, if he was going to grow up and become a CEO and make over $400,000 a year, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, that was, it's a lot of money now. It was far much more money then. He was a very bright 3-year-old, and he reached a conclusion. Joy is not something we do. This is not allowed. And without realizing it, he downloaded that conclusion, and without realizing that, he built himself a life which was without joy. He made the decision. He chose to see a joyless world. We all do this. This is what the Course in Miracles lesson is telling us to be aware of. When it says there is no world, the way I read that is there is no world apart from the one I project on it. I'm the one creating my experience of the world. There is this energy field out there which is completely fluid and infinite. And as I interact with it and I project on it what I've been taught by my family and my culture, and I choose my interpretations, and those interpretations and the storehouse of selective perception, as Alan Cohen calls it, that I have chosen throughout my life. If you want to explore that a little bit, go to Michael Rice's 3 Early Memories of Conflict exercise and work that a few times over the next 6 months and discover how most of us, perhaps all of us, have been reliving patterns in our life that we downloaded in our first 5 or 6 years of life. And we are not approaching life as healthy, flexible, resilient, creative, loving souls. We are approaching life and interacting with life in response to patterns that we downloaded, driven by patterns and conclusions that we downloaded in our first few years of life. So when I read this lesson and it says there is no world, I read that I haven't created. I don't experience anything that I haven't chosen by my selective perception, etc. If you go to the Way of Mastery, we've done this a number of times on this show. All you have to do is go to page 5 in the Way of the Heart from the Way of Mastery book. And it gives the very first axiom. The first step in awakening is to allow this axiom of truth into your mind. What is that axiom of truth? Nothing that you experience is anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And that truth, that fundamental observation, capital T truth, is woven all through Diedrich's work. It's the core of this work that Michael Rice teaches. It's the core of the Course in Miracles. It's the core. It's right there in page 5 of the Way of Mastery. It's the essence of what Byron Katie came to when she realized that she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts. And if she will simply step into questioning her negative thoughts, her suffering ends. That's exactly the same as the Sedona Release Method stumbled across. These ancient truths, and either these people are studying the same source material or their source material shares source material. The observation is, I create my experience of life by how I choose to interpret and respond to the events that I believe have happened. And I believe they happen the way they do because I have selective perception. How selective is my perception? It's so selective that it's potentially deadly. Most of us have seen signs, especially in the spring, that say, start seeing motorcycles. If you live in certain parts of the country, you'll see signs that say, start seeing farmers. Now, why in heaven's name would there be a need to put out a sign that tells people to start seeing motorcycles or start seeing farmers? Because our minds, and our science has proven this over and over again, our minds, our brain processes, our conditioned way of living in the world has us creating selective perception all day, every day. You can dive a little deeper and watch the Anil Seth video. A-N-I-L is the man's first name. S-E-T-H is his second name. Go to YouTube, type in those two words. You'll see things about hallucinating perception. Not only are we hallucinating everything that shows up in our brains as pictures, as a symbol of a symbol, but we are doing it selectively. So there's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system, and it tunes us into what we're looking for. It literally screens out things that aren't of interest. And so if we choose to see the world as a dangerous place and a fear-producing place and a threatening place and an angry place, that's what we're going to see. We're going to see the input from the outside. We're going to rearrange it in a way that it demonstrates to us that we were right. Michael Rice says, you know, the mind is an evidentiary device, and when you tell it, show me evidence that they're wrong and they hurt my feelings, that's exactly what my mind is going to show me. The fact might be that there's nearly infinite evidence of other conclusions or that could be arranged to form a wide range of other conclusions with very different impacts on my emotional state. But I will not be able to see them if I'm busy telling my mind, this is what I'm invested in, this is what I value, this is what I want you to show me. All these different sources tell us the same thing, that Course in Miracles has been getting at with these lessons. I can't see two worlds at the same time. The world that my mind shows me, especially when I'm in hostility or fear or sadness, is not all there is to be seen. And it is a false picture based on a tiny, tiny bit of all the information that's available. And if I can train myself to understand that I was put here, Guy Finley says it this way, you were not put in the world where somewhere off in some Himalayan cave is a master that if you find her, she can guide you. Guy Finley says, you were put in this world by your Creator with an instant, constant access to the sources, the wisdom that will teach you, that will never abandon you if you just ask to be taught. So when your perception of the world is that it is a dangerous place, is that women can't be trusted, or men always abandon me, or the other political party is bad, and this skin color person is safe and that skin color person is not. When you have those alarms go off in you, after you've been introduced to thoughts like this, now you have an option. Now you can choose to back up and question, to use the negative emotional state you experience as an alarm system, and you can hook that alarm response to turning inside and examining how it is that you're using then the inputs of sight and sound and physical sensation and smell, et cetera, to formulate a perception that tells you this is a bad place, this is a bad world, this is a dangerous place, these people are no good, they're hurting me, I'm helpless. And once you see how you're creating that perception and you see through it as false, then you've got access to the tools that Michael provides and a host of other people provide that can help you dismantle that false belief. It can help you question the meaning you've given some of your past life experiences and begin to create consciously, rather than, as Michael Rice frequently says in some of his talks, the unconscious creation process of decision, which is just that reflexive response whenever something gets triggered from my past. Consciously create an experience of life, as the Course in Miracles lesson for today says, is something more aligned with what you want. What do you value? What do you want? It isn't pride that tells you that you're creating the world you experience. That's just the actuality of life. So our calling number is 563-999-3581. No one's in the chat room. We have 6 or 7 people on the call, depending upon which moment you look at the switchboard. And we've got 28 minutes left. How can we support you today? What is your comment or your question? What would be of service? We listened to, we watched a talk by Abraham last night in the Tuesday support group. And we had some discussion about what is this process of creating our experience of life. What is the very same message that Abraham is putting out there, that I'm going to use my awareness to focus on certain aspects of this infinite energy flow, this field of energy that has infinite possibilities. And as I choose to focus on it, it becomes my conscious experience. So we had a support group last night, and we did some Abraham Hicks talk from a year ago. And tomorrow night we'll have another support group, and you're welcome to join us or send a friend to join us. The information about that is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. We still have the call out. If you have somebody that you think would be a good interview, E for either Mindshifters Radio or the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream, please let me know. And in the meantime, Ellen, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. How are you?
I'm quite well, thank you. Staying blessedly busy.
I was just calling because this lesson is just so wonderful. It really just goes right to the heart of everything. One of the things that I had heard someone say that I had been sitting with for probably the last week and a half is, I do not live in this body. This body lives in me. And when you really sit with that, it really makes you realize how you have put shackles on your body and giving it kind of responsibility for keeping you alive and all these things that we do, which are just absolutely ridiculous. So when I was reading today's lesson, I just expanded that idea out a little bit, and I said to myself, well, I do not live in this world. This world lives in me. It lives in my mind. And, you know, that's, I think, the key thing the Course is trying to teach us. And therefore, you know, what is there to fear? Just what's in my own mind. There's nothing out there to be afraid of. And so it's always a thought that we believe, because thoughts in themselves, of course, are really nothing until we give them our power of belief. And so it's really recognizing how there's a couple of places in the Course. There's one place where it talks for it, a couple of places that come to mind where it talks about responsibility. And the one place it says that we can say to ourselves, I am responsible for the world I see. And then there's another place in the Course where it says, your only responsibility is to accept the atonement for yourself. And so I think that this lesson really speaks to both of those ideas, because it's saying that the world you see is an illusory world. And yes, so you are responsible for creating all of these illusions. But what are illusions? They're really nothing at all. So, because I know, like, when I first learned the concept of, oh, I'm creating the world I am experiencing, I'm seeing, I'm perceiving, that seemed to put it like a big burden on me. But once you understand that, no, it's nothing. It's nothing real. It's nothing actual. It's not what God created. Then it's like, oh, then you can just loose the world from all that you thought it was and realize that your only true responsibility is to accept the atonement or the at-one-ment, the healing of the mind that believes that it ever became separate, because that's where all the fear and the guilt came from. So I just love this lesson because it just goes right to the heart of everything and makes it so clear.
And to add to what you're saying, when you say, you know, your only responsibility is to accept the atonement for yourself, then when you recognize there is no separation, that means you're accepting it for the world. You're accepting it for everyone. And you begin to see, and you begin to see that just as you were created and you remain as the Creator created you, so is everyone and everything you see remaining
right,
as they were created to be.
Right. So that's why I like to think of the atonement as the at-one-ment, because that is what it does. It, you see that, oh, I'm at one. I'm actually at one with everything. So, of course, what I am, everything else is. And, you know, when you accept that is truly my only responsibility, all these other burdens that you've taken on, all these thoughts that you believed about yourself and the world, you can just let them go, because all you can ever lose is a false belief. You can't ever lose anything of value.
Only lose what's false.
Yes. And I was reading the chapter I was reading this morning in Byron Katie's book. What she said, as soon as you fear losing something, you have created a world in which enemies can appear. You know, there can be enemies in that world. Before you have any fear of losing anything, there can be no enemies. And, you know, it's this whole fear of loss and really getting that there can be no loss, because everything of value is that which you are, and you can forget yourself, you can forget who you are, but you can't lose it. And if you
that would be a true statement based on all these teachings, absolutely.
Yeah. So the only thing there ever is to do is to wake up to the truth. the truth of yourself, the truth of all that is, because it's one and the same thing. And I was just thinking about this lesson this morning. I was just in stitches. I mean, it's like every time you get that cosmic joke, which this lesson really got me there again, you know, it's just so hilarious. Like you see the insanity of what you've been living. It's like, it's just hilarious. It's,
so
you know,
that,
and
when
it's,
that window opens up, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
That window opens up and you can actually see, yep.
Yeah, because until then, it's so painful. And then it's just amazing how it just completely goes to the opposite. And then it was after I finally like was able to relax out of the, this sounds funny, to I guess calm myself down from the laughing, because it was so, it was just self-perpetuating. The more I laughed, the funnier it was. But then it was like, wow, everything feels so loose. It's like I realized laughter loosens everything up, and it's like so perfect for the lesson today. I loose the world from all I thought it was. Yeah, and myself from all I thought I was. And yeah, so I just wanted to comment about this lesson because it's, I don't even remember this lesson from before. This is my fourth time through. And here it's like, what? What? This is everything right here.
Well, every lesson is everything right here if you get it completely. It's like Freud was famous for saying, if you take one dream, it doesn't matter what the dream is, and you analyze it completely, your analysis will be done. And Way of Mastery in several places says, if you understood this fully, what we just said, you wouldn't need anything else.
Right. Yeah, and I've seen that so clearly before, that every time I have suffered, it's because of misunderstanding, a misperception. You know, like I suffered my whole life because I believed that my mother didn't love me. And then I actually realized it wasn't true, like when, in my 50s. And saw, like, wow, everything that not only I suffered as a child, but all the situations that I experienced throughout my life, which were just, again, the mind trying to prove it's right, that what it believes is right, so it's going to create all the evidence, the evidence of something that's just a big fat lie.
Yeah, and your laughter reminds me of the release. There have been a number of times I've been at Michael Rice's intensive center, and people are getting, at one point or another, doing one activity or another where they get a release, and the energy being released comes out as laughter,
mm-hmm.
hysterical laughter, and sometimes extended hysterical laughter. It's the same as somebody who starts sobbing, crying. It's just an energy release.
Exactly.
And it's every bit as valid. Yeah, it's every bit as valid as crying or laughing. It's all the same stuff.
Yeah, I can't tell you, because I used to have a laughing meditation group, and I can't tell you how many times I'd be in the middle of just hysterical laughing, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, am I laughing or am I crying? I couldn't tell. It's exactly the same.
Yep.
But always, at the end, I would feel, because I always end up lying on my back on the floor. For some reason, that just seems to help free the laughter. And then I would just lay there, and I'd always feel like I was floating. Just this freedom. You know, and there again is that loosening. You've loosened everything up, and the laughter itself, like, is a loosening within your body of all this stuff that's, like, stuck. It literally like loosens everything up. I know I used to experience like a lot of coughing and just like clearing of the throat when I would start laughing. It's like all this stuff that's stuck is starting to lift up and out. And so I just found it so beneficial. And what is more fun than laughing, especially when you're in a group of people and you're feeding off of each other? I mean, it's so much fun.
It's ancient wisdom. I mean, it's so old it's even woven into a Joni Mitchell song. You know, laughing and crying, it's the same release. So we know we're tapped into ancient wisdom when we're quoting Joni Mitchell lyrics.
I don't know those lyrics. So
well,
what did she say?
Joni Mitchell's famous not only for her voice, but for her insightful lyrics, and bless her heart. So, congratulations on another deep release, whether it was laughter or tears. And I'm always happy when someone's doing the course and they're getting an insight that they never got before. It just opens the door for me and everybody else to get other insights.
Right. And I think it's the same insight I've been getting over and over. It's just at a deeper level. Because it's always that cosmic joke of like, oh, yeah, look at what you've created here. And, it's insane. It's totally insane. But it can't harm you in any way. Nothing can ever harm you. So it's not like, oh, no, I'm insane. No, it's like funny. It's hysterical.
Yeah, you know the old quote about life is a ride in an amusement park?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that?
I don't know that, but I love roller coasters, so go ahead.
There's a Bill Hicks. He's a comedian, had a lot of foul language and all that, but he was very bright, and he's no longer with us, but he has a bit he did. He says, the world is like a ride in an amusement park. And when you choose to go on it, you think it's real because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills. It's very brightly colored and it's very loud and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time and they begin to question, is this real or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid ever, because this is just a ride. And we kill those people. Hey, shut him up. We've got a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up. Look at the furrows of worry on my brow. Look at my big bank account and my family. This has to be real. It's just a ride. But we always kill the good guys who try and tell us that. Have you ever noticed that? And we let the demons run amok. But it doesn't matter because it's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings and money. A choice. Right now, between fear and love. Now, the eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your doors, buy guns, and close yourself off. The eyes of love, instead, see all of us as one. Here's what you can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year, and instead, spend it on feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would do many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer space, forever in peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a ride, and you can change it with a thought. And if that doesn't sound like Course in Miracles, I don't know what does. Yeah.
I love that. That's wonderful.
Bill Hicks, life is a ride. Life is just a ride. And it's available all over the place on the internet. You can either hear him do the talk or you can read the text as I just did. So, we have 9 minutes left. How shall we spend it?
I remember that when you were reading that, I was reminded of Lillian DeWaters and one of the things that she wrote, which is, look how many people have died for their beliefs. You know, it's like people literally die because they believe in death. I mean, like they experience death because they believe in it. And it's like, what? and now, like, one of the things that I do is when I see something that appears to be dead, like a baby bird on the ground that may have fallen from its nest or an animal on the road, I just remind myself, there is no death. There is no death, and I will not believe this quote-unquote evidence that my mind has created to make me believe that it's real. The value never was in the form of a thing. And to look at a lifeless form doesn't mean you need to be like, oh no, oh look at the poor thing. Doesn't mean you need to feel bad. I can be happy no matter what if I recognize the truth. There is no death.
That would be the key of this lesson. I can be, I am creating my experience each moment, so what am I choosing to create when I'm experiencing sadness and fear? What is the perception that's driven by my goals serving up for my awareness? And if it's something that brings me joy and aliveness, feel free to keep doing it. If it's something that's bringing upset and fear and bitterness, I have the same option. I feel free to keep doing it or choose something else. And in this lesson, as in many others, they're reminding us it's a thought. It's a choice of a thought. What do you value? Are you going to hold your beliefs about what the world is, or are you going to let the world loose from those beliefs? Are you going to hold your fears about what the future holds, or are you going to let it loose and just experience it as it comes and create an entirely different life for yourself through awareness, through the practice of the conscious awareness of how you're creating your experience?
Right, and to recognize that the thoughts themselves have absolutely no power. It's only when you believe the thought that is where the power lies.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, okay, so my mind is thinking all these thoughts, these negative thoughts. Well, am I choosing to believe them or give them the power of belief or not? It doesn't matter. Your mind could be full of negative thoughts. You can still choose to be happy, not to believe them. So it isn't the thoughts themselves. It's your belief in them where the power
exactly.
is. And, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, the thing I was mentioning, Diedrich and his Choose Again program, you know, that whole thing is based on the very same thing that all of these observations are based on. And nothing outside of me has caused my upset. Right? The upset is offering me a chance to heal. But it's never caused by the things outside of me.
Well, there is nothing outside of you. It's within you. That's why I love the phrase, you know, that I came up with this morning, is that I don't live in this world. This world lives in me. And then you, if you can expand yourself out to that, you know, that the whole universe lives in you, it's like, wow.
Start the observations that help you see the truth of it. Use the reality management worksheet and notice you go from a level 6 or 8 or 10 upset down to a level 2 upset in the period of one worksheet, and nothing outside of you has changed. And yet your entire experience of your life has changed.
Right.
It's all an inside job. Even your experience of the outside world is an inside job. Even the outside world is an inside job, as you're saying.
Yes, the outside world is inside.
Yeah, it's inside the consciousness.
Because
it
you,
is
what you are
physically.
Is all there is.
That's right.
There's nothing outside
right.
of you. And I love that part in the lesson where he talks about, you know, when we lose the world from what we thought it was, then our mind is open to see our real creations, the ones that, you know, we co-created with God. And, wow, you know, if that is an enticement to let go of the world that you think you're seeing, I don't know what is. And that there's no separation.
It's like the carrot and the stick, right? So the carrot is you might be able to experience every good thing you've ever imagined and then infinitely better. And the stick is you experience your negative emotions. So, you know, the negative emotions make me want to run away from it. And the potential to experience untold, unimaginable positive is the carrot to make me want to go in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that in our Mindshifter support group this morning about how we limit our experience by our imagination of what we think it could be instead of just allowing it to be what it is.
Yeah, Michael Singer likes to talk about the cost and the benefit. So go for those things that are all benefit and no cost. And this work is all benefit and no cost. It doesn't cost you anything. The only thing you're going to lose if you do this work is your negative experience.
Right.
Challenge, questions, your negative beliefs. Why? Because they're all cost and no benefit.
Right, and that's why Byron Katie could experience nothing but joy when her house got ransacked, because she knew she couldn't lose anything and that the things that were taken from the house had no value for her any longer because she wasn't placing value
on
them.
Well, because she's learned to live her life valuing other things, valuing what is, rather than what she wants or what no longer is. I mean, it's a practical application of this work when someone's able to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for your time. We're down to our last minute or so, so I will mute you so we can get ready for our transition to our second hour. Thank you for the call, Ellen, and your comments. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank
if
you,
you're there,
Jim.
There you
appreciate
go.
Appreciate you.
Have a great show.
Thanks. All right, so welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday, May the 12th. 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us, and we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show, and we will give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and we cut the show a little bit short yesterday because we had no callers, and we had covered all the topics that we wanted to cover. And so this show is for you and for your support, and we want to be here for you. So So you need to dial in and press 1 and give us your conversation, topic that you want to discuss or something you don't understand. You need help with one of the worksheets. Go to our website, why, again, WHYAGA. Click on either the bullseye or the start here, and they both take you to the same place. And that's where you can listen to or read Chapter 24, the revised Chapter 24 of Michael's book. And the worksheet's there. There's samples of worksheets. There's MP3s of radio shows where we've walked people through doing the worksheets. And there's lots and lots of information there. Put the tools to work in your life. And then the show is here to answer any questions you have. Welcome, Michael.
Yes, we are. Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. We are blessed. Today we have that awesome little creature, Aria Rain, with us. And she's been being a doctor this morning and taking care of her animals. And we have a physical therapist here with Jeannie's dad. And so she has been carefully watching every move he makes. She's in med school. She's in training, learning all about it. So it's fun to watch her, fun to be part of her life. What a blessing. And we're going to talk about why is this happening to me again, again. We'll get to read the first couple of paragraphs at least from chapter 11 on processing and going unconscious. The conversation we've been having with Richard is about waking up from the past and how it's a gradual process and that you have to build the brain cells to move to something different. And right now I've been kind of, you know, acknowledging Richard for his waking up process that he's not too sure about, because at one moment he grasps and understands it makes sense and he's delighted with it, and then the next moment it's all garbage and doesn't make any sense and he's frustrated. And so I've just acknowledged him for the fact that he's on track and recognizing that it is a process. And so he, when I acknowledge him for that, kind of comes back with a sort of a sarcastic right groan. And I offer him, take my word for it, I offered reassuringly, catching yourself is a good thing, honest. In addition to the frustration of feeling like he was slipping back into old thinking patterns, he also had 20 questions begging to be answered all at once. And this is part of the non-being mind wanting to know everything yesterday. Make this simple. You know, it's like I've got $5 in 5 minutes. I want you to tell me everything you know. Well, it's not the way this process works. It is a long term. It's actually a lifetime of work to step into building the brain cells that empower you to step up to actuality and out of the old realities based in hostility or fear. So I offer him the thought that this process of in and out, understanding, losing understanding, is what happens to people when they get involved in this study. It can be difficult to keep the issues and insights straight. Some circling through and around the questions that come up is inevitable. This work, with its synthesis of so many disciplines, is a lot of information to digest in one sitting. It takes patience and time to build the brain cells and integrate those disciplines so that the tools become fully available and functional. And, you know, one of the things, the insights for me, at least, that I had early in doing this work and developing it back starting 50 years ago, was recognizing that when people heard something closer to the truth in one conceptual framework, it would catch their attention, would make sense to them, and then they'd just go on the same old way. But when they'd hear it in several different conceptual frameworks simultaneously, it all of a sudden started to make sense, tend to inspire change. So I purposely spent years studying the scientific discipline to explain it there, the psychological discipline to explain it there, the theological discipline, physiological. So each level, when people hear the truth in several conceptual languages, leads to more solid grounding in the truth. So it's that circling that makes it functional and available. There's an intricate pattern of interconnectedness which one must usually step back to see. You know, we've talked before about becoming the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions. And that's exactly what we're working to do here. As you do your work and sit with the insights that come, you'll see how all of life is synchronized. You might want to reread the first insight from the Celestine Prophecy, I suggested. Richard still looked a little bewildered and, once again, was holding his breath. So I gave him the reminder, keep breathing. Healing looks like this. When old trash surfaces, it is not fun. But sorting through what comes up in the presence of love is what clears it out. Can you remember feeling this lack of clarity ever before, I asked. And he spits back at me, well, why don't you just ask me about my whole life? And, of course, I'm not going to ask about his whole life, but, you know, here we are in the process. And so we'll come back tomorrow to the next set of ideas from this chapter on processing and going unconscious. By the way, if you don't have a copy of the book, you can go to our website and download it in several different languages. And each language is a free download. You just go to our website and there's a picture of the book on the homepage. Click the link and you'll be looking at different translations of the book. Download the one you can read. And or you can also usually find the book on Amazon or on eBay quite reasonably. Fortunately, back at the turn of the century, we put out several tens of thousands of these books. And so they're pretty much spread around the country and around the globe. And the used ones show up often on Amazon and eBay. So you usually get one. They used to sell, I understand, for $2, $3, $4. And now I'm being told that usually $7 or $8 is the going price. So I think since we started perhaps reading the book, more people have been looking for it, and it's sort of driven the price up a little bit. But anyway, it's a steal at $7 or $8. So that's where we're looking to go, is to recognize how this process works. And Richard is not a real character, but rather is a composite of many real characters. I've taken real-time, real-life experiences and integrated them into the story with Richard so that we can give as many illustrations of the principles as possible in the short span of a 204-page book. So welcome to the process. And if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations we're syndicated in where we can't see you on our control panel, you can't talk back to us, all you have to do is dial into the show on your phone. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. If you push 1, we'll be having a conversation. And we are absolutely, totally, completely committed to supporting you in every way we can in understanding these tools, putting it to work in your life, remembering that the word forgive has nothing to do with I'm going to let you off the hook because there's pain moving in me. You know, the Greek story is they're the ones who caused your pain. It's all their fault. But if you forgive them, if you just let them off the hook, then your life will get better. And you can disconnect pain from your brain's image of someone else, so it can seem like life gets better in regard to that person that you pardon, because what the Greeks called forgiveness is actually pardoning. So call it what it is. Let somebody off the hook if you choose to. There are benefits to it, but then remember to go and do your forgiveness work. If you're in pain, if you're in trauma, if you're in turmoil, that pain or trauma or turmoil is an internal experience. And when you realize that, then you start to understand that forgiveness is a tool which allows you to go to the root of your trauma and remove it. So think of forgiveness as removal rather than letting off people off the hook. And you're a big step forward in your forgiveness work. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet on the home front. So, someone press 1.
Well, what do you say we get some conversation going? Who's out there with the question for us? I'm sure there must be somebody who's using the tools. And you know, if you go to your app store on your phone, and you type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can download it free from the App Store and actually step into using the forgiveness worksheet process called Reality Management or the Wake Up Sheet. And you can introduce children, and some adults use the drag-on Klingon game that's in the app as well. So take it, put it to work. It will change your life. And the app is purposely set up so there are as few permissions as absolutely necessary. You know, most apps, you download them and they want to dial your phone. They want to take pictures. They want to send texts. They want to be able to change your drive. It's like, no, we don't want anything to do with the internal workings of your phone. It does require an internet connection for the app to work. That's the only permission that it requires to work, to be operative. And when you complete doing a worksheet process, you can print it and save it as a PDF. If you print it, it will ask for a second permission, and that is permission to write the file you're going to save to your hard drive on your phone. Other than that, no permissions required. We purposely kept it totally and completely private. And of course, if you put any of the tools to work, then we are here to support the use of those tools to answer specific personal questions and or support you in your process, whatever it is. So if you're out there in listener land, push one. Let's have a conversation. What's on your mind? How can we support you? And Ms. Jeannie, we've got nobody with any thoughts or questions.
Nope.
And I know Jeannie is tending to Ari Rain as well. So
has she gone to sleep? She's got her down for a nap. She's not asleep yet, but she's down.
Oh, good.
So.
Oh, good. Good for her.
I think I saw a hand flicker, but then it disappeared. There it is. 541, you're on the air. Who do we have?
No, hi. I thought maybe I had to try again because you might not have seen it. Hi.
Hey there, Miss Julie. We got you. How are you today?
Well, I heard you yesterday. Nobody was on, and then you left early, so I couldn't let you do that. So I'm rescuing the show here.
Oh, okay. Well, we're glad to have you here, and you know, if there are no questions, then there's no need for us to continue, and I'm willing to let it go. That's just what happens. So
that's
we've got a
true.
Lot on our plate right here where Jeannie's working on converting the Course in Miracles videos, and it's turning out to be much more of a job. We've got to go and buy a new computer for her to do that, a more powerful computer. And even with that, it's a slow process. But that's coming together, and we're still working on the codependence to independence communication practicum. We've got two more sessions we're planning to do, bonus sessions on that. So there's just a lot on the plate.
No.
And we are devouring as much as we can of it.
Well, then,
so what's exciting? What's happening in your world?
What's exciting and happening? Well, I'm noticing I think I'm having a touch of seasonal hay fever, which I was worried about being COVID, so I let go of my worry and realized that it's something, and my body's capable of handling it, and that's what I've determined. So that's good.
Perfect.
Nothing much.
I haven't talked to George recently. If you talked to him in the last couple of days, it's about 4 days since I've talked to him.
I have been moving in these last few days over the weekend, but I spoke to him earlier last week, and he's out of the hospital, at home, but still on dialysis. He's on dialysis, though. He has to go back and do that.
Okay.
And so he sounds a lot more clear, a lot more stable. And he's using the Avacyn at home a lot.
Good. Good. And you're moving again?
I did. Yes, I moved back to Ashland. I can say that now. I'm from Ashland, Oregon.
Really? Oh, Julie from Ashland, Oregon.
Well, it was. I remember
that first summer when you and several other people from the radio show showed up, and it was just such a celebration that everybody had put a face with everybody else they'd been listening to on the show.
Yeah, well, you know who started from, you know, because you always ask, where are you from? So
right.
Carrie Ellis would always say, this is Carrie from wherever it was in Colorado or something, right?
Right.
So I just imitated that because then you don't have to ask if I say who I am.
There you
where
go.
Where I'm from.
Cool.
But, yeah.
Well, Carrie is now from somewhere way down in southern Mexico.
Really?
Wow. That's where she's living these days. Yeah, she's been down there for, I don't know, over a year or so now.
Well, that's exciting for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a good form of momentum in her life. She was designing her life all along.
Yep. Yeah, she definitely set the rules and put them to work.
Yes, she did. Yes, that helped the forward momentum for sure. So, yeah, but I'm moving back. You know, I had to move once because I sold my home and it was right when the fires hit, so there was scarcity available. That sounds funny. That's an oxymoron. Scarcity was available then. But now there's more apartments, and so I got one, and it's really nice. I like it, and I'm doing okay teaching. My relationship is still very challenging because of the totally opposing viewpoints on COVID and on politics and all of that. And I say opposing because I can embrace his points of view without agreeing to them. And he definitely comes from wanting to convince me and persuade me all the time that I must think like him. And so that's triggering my resistance to anything authority, right? You know, this is your worksheet.
Right.
So it's a healing opportunity. And I'm just filling the airspace so I can leave now, but I was just being honest. I'm not without challenges. I have my own set that I'm familiar with.
Well, you know, one of the strengths that I see in my relationship with Jeannie, you know, Jeannie has a mind that works so differently from mine. It's like night and day. And sometimes that's been a challenge when I have a goal and I want her to do it this way, or she has a goal and she wants me to do it that way. But more and more as I forgive around that issue, I get to see how our seemingly opposite but complementary ways of doing things are really a strength that really works and is part of what makes our lives together work and makes our work together pretty awesome. So,
oh, that's nice.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
It's really, really been a gift to see that.
You know, that's like really embracing it, like holding hands. Your hands come together and they fit into the different grooves of the other person, you know. And you're joined, and yet individuated, you know? Yeah.
Precisely. That's it.
That's beautiful.
Well,
thank
any specific, yeah, cool. Any specific thoughts or questions on worksheets that you're doing at this point around those differences that are coming up or
well,
communication?
My deepest challenge in any worksheet is to be really truthful, at least with myself, whether I take an action, you know, like, well, we better break up, you know, or something like that. I just have to honor my feelings and tell the truth about them, and then they can freely live, or I can freely live with, why I have those feelings. It's just what I'm made up of. I actually value my feelings. I actually do have my own set of goals, and they aren't necessarily needing to be sacrificed. You know, just tell the truth and let myself have them. So that's a big step for me. That's been good.
Nice. Nice. Cool.
And I'm excited because I get to design my life again instead of fitting into an authoritative box that I'm projecting onto my relationship with my partner.
Right.
Yeah.
No. Moving out of that replicant mind into the mind that has all the room it needs for creating consciously.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me of the replicant mind. Yeah, that replicant mind is actually a structure of the energy that I keep running to keep it.
That's it. And, of course, when you talk about feelings, those feelings are simply shadows of thoughts. And when you become conscious of, you know, is this thought useful to me? If there's some form of hostility or fear attached to it, it's probably because the thought is really useful or useless or destructive, and the feeling is giving us an opportunity. It's calling us, you know, calling attention to, there's a thought disorder in here. Clean it up.
Yeah. That ready to be
we use it consciously. It's awesome.
Use it what? Consciously? Oh, right. Yeah.
Consciously. Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Use the thought or the emotion or the event. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And the awareness. Gee, there's, you know, there's some sort of untoward feeling here. I want to honor that. I want to value that. And then I want to look behind it to look at what its cause is. And if its cause is not valid, you know, if it's a thought based in hostility or fear, chances are it's not going to produce valid feelings. They'll be my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't advance me in the actuality of life. And so
yeah.
I pay attention to them. I get to change the thought disorders. And along with that, my feelings change.
Yeah, that's good. That's that word you used, toward, you know, and in forgiveness, as to. You know, those are really important sort of links. Thought to action, I think, I guess.
Definitely.
They're really good.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Language is very interesting these days, too. You know, finding other ways of saying things, and in my mind, I'm constantly correcting what I'm hearing in the authoritative outer world reflecting to me, you know, that, oh, I used to see it that way. It's showing up to show me that I'm also thinking differently now, and those ways I'm ready to let go of.
Cool.
Those old
Sweet.
Ways.
Yay.
I know.
All right. Well, anything else on your mind for today?
No, I hope another caller raises their hand, or else you go be with Aria, Lane, and
That's
get on
what
with
I'll
the
do.
Thank you. Mike.
That's what I'll
Thank
do. All right. Blessings. Lots of love.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, Miss Jeannie, anything on your mind or anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue? Or
we had a hand go up. I believe it's,
All right.
I believe it's Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Yeah.
Welcome, young lady.
Thanks. Tonight we don't have a meeting, right? Or do we?
Correct. We do not. Now we're going to add two more sessions. One on the PowerPerson worksheet, the in-depth PowerPerson worksheet, and one
right.
on the responsibility communication. And that one will be determined by when Magda's ready. And with
okay.
some notice, we'll send it out and invite everybody to give a listen and develop questions around that so we can take that whole responsibility communication thing to a new level. And it'll probably be
yeah.
a Sunday afternoon thing so that Peter will be able to join us.
Oh, I see.
That's where we'll go with it.
Oh, all right. Good. Good.
It is good.
Well.
It's going to give us some extra hours on the self-study package, which will be awesome. We'll have a few more bonus
right.
hours. I don't know. We're probably going to be up around 88 hours on that new package coming out. So,
wow, that's a lot.
It's pretty
Thank
awesome.
Thank you for
yeah.
doing it. Nice of you. The lesson in the Course in Miracles today, we had our Zoom meeting, and we spent a lot of time on it. And I'm one of, it's the lesson is I loose the world from all I thought it was. I have to take a deep breath just reading that. Because I do have so many thoughts about what the world is. And, you know, mm-hmm. Liz Julie was calling and she was saying that she and her boyfriend have this difference and that he's trying to convince her and she knows her own mind. So here you have two people with two realities.
And right.
What is my thought about that? My thought might include he has a reality, she has a reality. I think I understand both stances. And the reality I see is that we are, all of us, going to have different points of view, take stances, often stances that do not appear, the way we're thinking, appear to have the communal common good that is being put forth. And I'll take us back to, like, World War I, World War II.
Mm-hmm.
David Brooks, I don't have the article in front of me, but David Brooks wrote a very good article about how during World War I and World War II, we were quite cohesive as a country. Because we
right.
had a common enemy that was outside. And so we all, most of us pulled together. A lot of us went into service. A lot of us went into building gardens so that, you know, agricultural efforts
Food.
Continued.
Sure.
I can't name all the things we did, but we acted in both wars like
a
cohesive. Yeah, as a unit. We're not doing that now. And he's saying, and we probably won't, for instance, reach herd immunity because of the various stances on the vaccination. And he said we see ourselves as individuals and we confer with our highest only what we think is best. And as a result, we've got these factions and we're separated from one another, one side and the other side. And we probably won't see that kind of cohesiveness and consciousness for the community to take all, you know, come together on something. And I'm applying this lesson as best I can to all of those thoughts. And I don't know whether I think what David Brooks says is amazing, to say the worst, and maybe upsetting if I choose to see it that way. And then one of us in our Zoom group has chosen not to have the vaccination, and I told her about our family reunion that's coming up where we are allowed to have 25 people and no more at this point, laws of Connecticut, and we all
right.
have to have been vaccinated, which puts mm-hmm. a lot of pressure on one particular member of our family who is not
right.
having the vaccination. And
mm-hmm.
I think she feels as if she's being punished and as if she's being excluded. And it isn't as if we have a choice. It's sort of the state is making that pronouncement.
Right.
But all of this, Michael, it's just boggling my mind because I'm trying to loose the world from all the, I thought it was, and what I'm seeing is, I think it's actuality that we are at odds with one another over an issue, and on both sides there are good arguments and maybe not so good arguments, some conspiracy theory arguments and some immune system and scientific arguments. Who knows? Okay, I've handed you a big pile of confusion. What would you like to say about that, if anything, to help?
Well, here's what I know. Two people are going to enter into a relationship, let's say in a marriage. If there's
yeah.
going to be a cohesive marriage, then every bit of fear that he can bring up in her, every bit of fear that she can bring up in him, is probably going to have to surface and be healed. for cohesion around whatever those issues are. Every bit of rage, every bit of sadness, every bit of hatred, every bit of vengeance, every bit of pain, in order to be truly cohesive, is going to have to be addressed on at least some level. So there's going to be a period of confusion.
Yeah.
Once, you know, the shine of the new relationship wears off, you know, they say the honeymoon is over, there's going to be a period where people are going to have to do their work. Now, if that's accurate and true about two people coming into a relationship, how much more accurate and true would that have to be about 350 million people coming into a relationship with each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a cleanup job. So, you know, while I could spend all my time thinking about what they're doing and what they should be doing, what I should be making them do, perhaps where I need to be spending my time is in looking at what's the part of me that contributes to the confusion, that holds some form of hostility or fear, and do my work, and then step into being the space that supports the harmonization of that larger group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And as, you know, our country goes, there's certainly a lot more people around than there were in World War One. And certainly, you know, looking at a common enemy allows people to drop many of their conflicting things that would otherwise create confusion within community.
Right.
You know, it definitely forces people to move in that direction. And perhaps as we start to look at, you know, another solution might be to look at how do we create cohesion for 350 million people. Maybe, and you know, you go back to the scriptures and they say, for lack of knowledge, my people have been destroyed. Here's the Creator saying, people have been destroyed for a lack of knowledge, and without vision, they perish.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's time for us to look for someone that has actual leadership skills instead of skills of degrading others and creating conflict at every turn, for someone to come forward, a true statesman or stateswoman to come forward that has real vision that people can lift their eyes up to, look at it and go, oh, now there's a vision I can join in.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to, I think, that would assist in creating a focus without having to create a common enemy, where we can work together to create that vision. And then over time, those fears and hostilities and rages and guilt that are going to have to be cleaned up are going to tend to be cleaned up. So one of the things that I see is that, you know, if we could produce, create a true visionary leader that would actually lead us into a new way of being together, a new way of experiencing life together as a country, then I think we could make some real progress. Right now, I don't see that on the horizon, but I certainly hold the space for it.
Yeah, it would have to be someone with a capacity way beyond my imagination. Even hearing you say what you're saying and knowing about the tools, I get that. I think of Marianne Williamson and how she was trying to be that person. And I certainly had a great regard for her. I wish she would step up and guide us, because I imagine...
I wish she had hung in on the political scene longer than she did. I think that...
Yeah.
People were starting to listen, and she certainly introduced into the conversation things that most people had never considered. And it would be nice to see her stepping up to the plate and doing that again, because she certainly has the grace and poise to carry it off.
Yeah.
That's my take.
I wonder if our present leadership would be open if she stepped up again as an advisor of some sort. I mean, certainly... that's more possible now than maybe before, but I'm getting off, but that's a lovely idea.
Sure.
And that's, yeah.
Maybe you're the one that needs to write a letter to her and to the powers that be saying, I'd like to introduce you to someone that brought something unheard of to the political conversation of our country. And we need that conversation. So why don't you contact her? Who knows? You know, you might be the catalyst because she certainly is there and has the brain cells, has the capacity to carry that off. I'd certainly support it.
That's a wonderful idea. That's a very happy, nice idea, Michael. Thanks. Yeah, I can do that. I will do that.
Who knows? Who knows? You might be the visionary.
Well, I
with
have
that thought.
Vision, but I yeah,
well, you
right.
do, but you do. But you do. You do. You saw what she was capable of, and you have the vision of her being able to hold up a banner that, you know, might just be what pulls enough minds together in this country for us to have a common vision that unites us and allows us to drop some of those conflicts. I'd hold the space for that, and I'd support it.
Hey. All right.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome idea because she seems to have totally dropped out of the conversation since she dropped out of the race. You know, I'm sure she's doing something. I mean, she's done some pretty awesome stuff in the world. And maybe your call to her will be something that pulls her out and opens a space. Certainly the powers that are in power at this point have heard of her, had to have seen her in the debates.
Right.
So
that's a great idea.
Who knows?
It's like,
maybe you
it's
just
like,
struck on something.
Maybe, or together we did. The thing is, you have opened my mind so that I think I was in too small of a bubble. And to stretch around so everyone's included, whatever sides we're on within the bubble, oh, boy, that would be wonderful. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I know that one of the things I heard her do was, you know, a conversation about children. And I don't care which side of this whole political debate you are. I mean, there is the occasional person that has a hate relationship with their children. But by and large, I think everybody cherishes their children. I don't care whether you're liberal or conservative, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, whether you're a Trumpian or a Bidenian or whatever else there is. Everybody cherishes their children. And so, you know, that's a conversation to unite. And many, many other conversations that she was having, I think, could be held up to really be a light to and draw everyone, perhaps in many cases, away from the conflict because, well, there's nothing else interesting to do but conflict. And, you know, many people live in a world, well, I need some kind of distraction.
No.
So maybe we'll be able to hold her up in that conversation and create a light that people unite behind and let's go for it. You know, there's a piece of writing by Bucky Fuller, and this goes back several years. You know who Buckminster Fuller is?
Yeah.
So he did a piece of writing where he said, you know, we have enough technology that enough wealth can be created to keep everyone in high style very, very little effort on anyone's part.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, Buckminster Fuller is considered one of the geniuses of the century.
Mm.
Like, you know, maybe it's time for us to just create a space of support and caring enough for everyone to really truly be supported in who they are as human beings and having without outrageous effort enough food on the table and a roof over their heads to just be able to get to the point where we move from survival to thriving.
Great.
And it all starts with a conversation, so here it is.
Mm-hmm. All right. I will look into it, and I will report
Thank
back.
Thank you for starting the conversation. Yay. All right. Cool. Well, anything else on your mind?
Yeah, you gave me a mind shifter the other day. A doozy.
Remind me which one it was.
Well, why should you remember? Good grief, you hand them out like gumdrops. Basically, it's safe and healing, and I love it when I can settle back, breathe, rest, and sleep. And
yes.
I wrote a lot of stuff about how I'll tell you the bottom line, worst thought that showed up. And that is,
okay,
you took that personal code evaluation and you've been doing your work and you've been feeling great and you're getting away from me. So I'm going to hit you where you're most vulnerable. I know that's an erroneous thought. I'm going to get you at night, baby. And I'm going to really give you a hard time. And because this, you don't have any defenses in the night like that. So you're just a sitting duck. And
interesting,
you know,
to catch your mind in his games.
I know. Isn't it something?
Wow.
And so there were just a lot of stuff like I'm paying my dues and there are a lot of bad, you know, we talked about demons the other day, which are thought disorders. And yes, exactly. Thought disorders like old people don't sleep well, you're running out of good hormones, you know, just a lot of garbage came up. But, and I knew I had about 200 worksheets to do, probably. Well, that's an exaggeration. But, I mean, I have a lot of work to do. But my question to you is it possible, just having written them down, that I can believe the healing that I think has come from just writing them down?
Absolutely. I mean, let's face it. All you have to do is change your mind. And if you change your mind, you change your chemistry, you change your body.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it take to change your mind? Now, you know, you could play the game of the last holdout, and I'm going to make it as difficult as possible. Or you could just say, oh, there's a higher thought. I'm going to go with that and let it be settled within you.
Mm-hmm.
And then go with that. And if you do, being a creator, that's what you'll produce. You know, I forget who it was. I think it might have been Henry Ford that says, tell yourself you can or tell yourself you can't, and you'll be right.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of stories that are told to justify what doctors can't understand, and most of them are baloney. Because they're people who don't live by that rule. Therefore, if that rule doesn't apply to one person, it doesn't apply to anybody. Except that the rule that applies is, if I accept it, then that's how it's going to apply for me. And I can change my mind about that. Changing our minds is such an awesome thing. You know, people look at what somebody says and they say, oh, how terrible that is and how upsetting that is and how disturbing that is. Or I could look at that same thought coming from somebody and change my mind about it and go, oh, that's just another thought. And change the whole arena in my life just by simply going, oh, that's a thought.
Yeah.
In fact, years ago, and, you know, it's a line I've used for many, many years, and this goes back probably 38 or 39 years ago in Delray Beach, Florida, and there was an older woman there who attended my Course in Miracles classes for some time, and she caught on to that response and started to use it with herself, and when she'd start to tell herself a story, she said she would just kind of hear my voice in her ringing in her ears saying, well, that's a thought. And because I have that thought, do I have to buy it? And that was like, that was her hook. That was her turnaround on a lot of trauma was, oh, Michael would just say, that's a thought. And I don't have to believe my thoughts just because I have them. I don't have to buy it. I don't have to go there. I don't have to live it out.
Yeah.
And to always go with the highest thought you can come up with is a blessing, I think.
Right. Well, one of the things I'm having to let go of is something you said, which is sleep is essential. Good sleep is essential to right perception or perception of the truth. And certainly that's been my experience. I'm not arguing with you, but that is, to me, a scary thought, because if you don't get it, then what? Then you're doomed and you're in bad trouble.
So let me see. So a thought scares you.
Right. That's it.
Or do you scare yourself with the thought?
I scare myself with the thought. Definitely.
What if you just forgave the belief that any thought can be scary? And just go, well, that's a thought.
Okay.
Rather than investing it with, oh no, just go, oh, that's a thought. And just, you know, like kind of like a little kid, wrestle its power away, you know, gone.
Yeah. What quote is this? The world is a thought apart from God. That pretty much collects everything into it.
Yeah. And remember that in the Course, that's the world of false perception.
Yeah.
It is born of error. You know, here's the rationale from the Course in Miracles for what I've just been talking about. And it comes right from that lesson, what is the world? Is what is the world? The world is false perception. It is born of error. It has not left its source. And it will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. What if I stopped cherishing all those thoughts of fear and hostility? I just go, oh, just another thought. And I stop investing it, and I stop manifesting out of it. Everything changes. And I remember working with a woman, this goes back probably 30 years ago, and she was starting to do some work and started to go what she considered to be a little bit crazy. Let me just take
Say
a second.
Again,
let me take a breath. Well, I'm just asking you, just give me a second to go back and gather the facets of this story together in my mind, because it's a long time ago. Okay, so there's a woman who had started doing this work, and she had been going a little bit funny, a little bit what people thought was kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were threatening her with putting her into an asylum.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly how it happened, but I don't know whether she drove there with somebody or she drove there on her own, but she went to and was, you know, looking on the grounds of this asylum, and they were seriously considering incarcerating her there.
Mm-hmm.
And she remembered being a little girl, and the last time she saw her mother was when they put her mother in that asylum.
Oh, my God, the very same one?
The very same one. And she had been incapacitated. She was separated from her husband. She was estranged from her children. And she was going pretty whack. And when she touched into that memory and dealt with the pain of losing her mother to that asylum, I mean, within, I don't remember exactly the time frame, it was very short, like a couple, 3 weeks, she was back in the house and in relationship with her husband and wasn't estranged from her children anymore and was able to go back to work. I mean, just processing the moment where she was so traumatized at losing her mother to an asylum, she almost replicated that exact thing in her life.
Right.
And
oh,
when
boy.
She had forgiveness and processed that memory, I mean, that was the end of all the craziness in her life.
Right.
Just like, boom, 2 or 3 weeks. Done.
Amazing.
With it.
That's like a metaphor for the whole of our existence. Oh, my God, that's amazing.
That's it. It's just a thought. And we can as easily turn our mind to thoughts from love, from God, from the Creator, as we can turn our thoughts over, or our actions over, to thoughts from hostility or fear.
Yeah.
And when we stop doing hostility or fear, then we move out of the sympathetic state where it's fight, fright, flight, fright, or fear.
Right.
And we move into the parasympathetic state where it's trust and embracing with love. And in that, there's rest. Now, Yeshua talks about, come rest in me. My burden is light.
You know, you and Jeannie were watching, and maybe still are, I don't know, the Call the Midwife.
Oh, yeah.
And
unfortunately, we've gone through nine seasons, and it's over. We're waiting for the next season to start.
Oh, God. Yes, I don't want to get to that point. But I think of you because that is like a heavenly community in a lot of ways. Everyone.
It really
is,
isn't it?
Yes, respectful of everyone else. And there is that Meshuggah woman, that nun, who is in there. And they pay no attention to that. They listen to her. She's a brilliant woman. And they love her back to her health. And they include her.
Yeah.
Yes, and they take care of her in the most respectful way. It's like that humility definition of seeing the highest and best and addressing only that in oneself and one and the other. And this has been the most incredible show, and it isn't that it's lacking in trauma. I mean, every episode
they
has
address
four
everything.
Different traumas going at once. Yeah.
Yep.
Everything.
And to me, the beauty of the whole show is that the overarching energy is that of Rachma.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and I mean, they're showing some pretty horrific, heavy-duty stuff.
I know.
But doing it with a mind connected to love instead of, you know, the drama and trauma mind. It's such a profound demonstration. And, of course, opens up all kinds of issues. I mean, it's giving Jeannie and I, you know, in watching it, lots of process work to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whoa. Anyway, boy, I'm glad you mentioned it. I knew about it, but I'd never watched them. And I've just been, you know, sometimes I'll watch two of them a day on a bingey day.
Yes.
That's unusual for me.
We know,
I'm not a TV
we know
person.
How that goes. We've done the same.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll actually look at each other or when we were watching it, and we've gone through two of them, and it's 11:30. It's like, well, should we do one more? Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah.
Well, now,
you don't have
it was different
huh?
if you've ever watched the series 24. Early in our, you know, in the early days of our relationship, we watched that series. Now, that one's really drama and trauma-oriented, and we would oftentimes look at each other at 2:30 in the morning and go, should we watch one more?
Oh, my God.
But that wasn't nearly so healing, but it did keep you on the edge of your seat.
Oh, my goodness. Don't tell me about it.
No, okay, I won't.
Yeah, you already did.
Yeah, you don't need that one. You don't need that one.
No. Yeah. But, you know, when you said that Jeannie did this big piece of work about a woman who lost her baby, often when I'm opening the show and I think, is this the one that got to Jeannie so terribly? Is this going to be the one? And maybe I've already passed it. I don't know. But
no, it's way out. It's like in season nine.
Or it's in
way
the
out
last
there.
Season.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably
it
the third or fourth
really
show
yet.
In season nine. Yeah.
I'm at the place where they just got back from Africa, and one of the nuns, one of the midwives in Africa has to perform a cesarean section, and she never has before, and it's so wonderful when that baby comes out
right.
and everybody's okay. Wow.
Yeah,
can
just,
do.
I mean, the way it holds such a sweet perspective on every kind of trauma that humans face, you know, very real, very realistic. It's
and
pretty
the
sweet, pretty cool.
They can persuade when one of them has a disagreement, their way of dialoguing with the disagreeer, and of course it's ideal, you know, you won't probably get that all the time in life, or maybe you would, but it's always so respectfully and lovingly, like the man who wouldn't allow water to be pipes put in his property over there in Africa. He was refusing, and the nun put the prospect to him in a way that opened his heart without threatening and without ultimatums. That is that's responsible communication.
Exactly. Yep. Powerful. Very powerfully done. It is. It's an inspiring series.
Yeah.
If anybody isn't sure what we're talking about on Netflix, there's I think it was nine years they did, and they're in their 10th season. They are producing a 10th season. I don't know when they'll get it on Netflix, but there were 9 years of a series called Call the Midwife, and it's true-to-life stories based in a poverty-stricken area of London back in the 50s, and it's really, really sweet and powerful.
And it comes right through the 60s now. I mean, it's amazing to see how the buildings change, communication change, availability of running water, indoor toilets. You see all of history going along at the same time, and it's really so amazing.
It is. It's pretty powerful. Pretty inspiring, I think, for a TV show, for all the garbage that's out there. It's one of the most inspirational ones that I've ever seen.
Right. I agree.
And I had looked for a rose bush to plant for the two babies that I have lost. And every rose I found, I mean, the thorns on it was ridiculous. And I was trying to get something that, you know, if Aria got near it, she'd be safe too. And I found this other flower, and I have no idea what it's called. It's purple and white, and it's beautiful. And it's a climber. And so I planted it, and first it, you know, just had one bloom come out, and I've taken pictures of it all along, and now it's got like, I don't know, 8 blooms, and it's climbing up the trellis I put there, and I said something when I first got it about it, it seemed like it was settling in where I planted it, and I said, I think it likes its new home, and Aria heard me say that, and every time she goes by it, she goes, oh, it's so happy it's in its new home.
Aw, that's so great.
It's doing awesome, though, and it's nice. Sweet to go by and then remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, the symbol it is, yes. Cool. Well, we appreciate you, and we hold the space for the best year yet of your eternal life and the eternal life of everybody that's with us listening. And thank you for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.